last case today, United States versus Alvarez.
May it please the court and counsel, my name is Brian Mullins. I represent the appellant, Ronald Alvarez. Mr. Alvarez is appealing his conviction for violations of the conditions of his supervised release. There were five violations that were alleged. Four of those violations were grade C violations, and none of those grade C violations were contested by Mr. Alvarez. Mr. Alvarez did contest the grade B violation, which was that he submitted false pay stubs to his probation officer. And our argument in the district court and our argument today is that the government did not prove by a preponderance of evidence that any of the factual assertions that were made in those pay stubs were false. And the way I think the pay stubs can be analyzed is to see them as asserting three main factual assertions. The first is that Mr. Alvarez worked for a company called the JPRS Pallet Company. And that fact is, and that was during May, June, and July of 2009. That fact is not disputed. The probation officer testified on cross-examination that she was aware that Mr. Alvarez did work for the pallet company, that she visited the work site, that she spoke with his supervisor, who happened to be his brother, Juan Alvarez. So that factual assertion was not disputed. The second fact is that Mr. Alvarez earned $800 per pay period, which was a two-week period, and this was before taxes. There was no evidence presented that that was not the truth, and it seems like a reasonable payment for a two-week period for the type of work that Mr. Alvarez was performing. The third factual assertion was that $262 was deducted for taxes, or at least was withheld for taxes. And again, this factual assertion was not disputed. There was no independent investigation performed by the probation office with the Internal Revenue Service to verify whether money was actually paid to the IRS, but there was no evidence to dispute that money was provided to take out from Mr. Alvarez's salary for taxes. So those three main factual assertions in the pay stubs, there was no evidence to dispute. I think the district court found, and I think the district court's finding was somewhat unclear, but the probation officer's testimony and I believe the district court's finding was emphasized towards the belief that Mr. Alvarez was paid in cash, and he stated in these pay stubs that he was paid right by check.
For no particular reason, except idle curiosity, where's your client now?
He is in prison, in federal prison.
He got 6 months?
He did get 6 months.
That was 6 months ago, wasn't it?
He reported at the end of January, so he will be done with his time in early July. That fact, I think, and I was going to get to that later, but I might as well address it now. We're not asking the court to vacate the sentence. The six-month sentence, first of all, we're not suggesting the sentence was unreasonable. I think given the timing of the case that by the time the district court would hear a new sentencing, if this court were to agree with Mr. Alvarez, he would be done with his time. So there really is no practical purpose for sending the case back for resentencing. So I think we would be happy, and we would ask the court to, if the court agrees with us, to vacate the judgment of conviction to the extent that the judgment found a violation of a grade B violation.
Why?
And that is because we do not believe the government proved by preponderance.
I understand that, but what purpose does it serve?
Well, for Mr. Alvarez, it serves, I think, purposes down the road. For first of all, he won't have a grade B violation.
Case he commits another crime.
You never know. But he won't have a grade B violation.
Protect him from himself.
It extends his supervised release, doesn't it?
No, he has no additional supervised release.
Oh, okay.
So there's no...
You'd have to commit a brand new crime to get...
There's no practical effects for this case. That's true. But a grade B violation, especially this grade B violation, I think, it's a act of dishonesty. I think it's something that Mr. Alvarez, if down the road he applies for a job and he's asked about this, submitting false pay stubs, I think, is a much more serious offense than the grade C violations that were at issue.
And his prospective employer will look very carefully to see whether he got nailed for submitting bum pay stubs. I appreciate your point. I mean, the purity of the law is very close to my heart, too. I was just wondering why we were doing this.
And I understand, as a practical matter, certainly compared to a lot of cases where there is significant amounts of prison time on the line, this is probably does not rise to that level. But
I found out years ago that hell hath no fury like a professional criminal who gets nailed with a bum rap. He thinks the Constitution's gone down the tubes, and he's all upset. He wants to leave America immediately.
Well, Mr. Alvarez isn't asking for that much. But
just clean up the record.
Correct. And so to address what I think is the strongest argument against us, which is that he was told that he needed to be paid by check. He submitted these documents, and the probation officer suggested that the documents were more or less saying that he was paid by check, and in fact he was paid by cash. And I don't believe the pay stubs make that assertion that he was paid by check. The really only inference you can make from the pay stubs themselves is in one portion it says this check, and that's followed by the number 262, which would be the amount that was deducted for taxes. I think that's ambiguous what that means. It could mean that a check of $262 was sent to the IRS. It could just be a general statement that this check, meaning this pay period, and $262 was covered by this for this pay period. So I don't necessarily think, even if the probation officer's testimony is considered credible, that establishes that the pay stubs that were submitted were false. And unless the court has any questions, I will reserve
what,
the rest.
What about the serially connected or sequential, I should say, numbers?
Well, I think we're only left to speculate as to what that means. What I would suggest it means is that Mr. Alvarez was the only person at the company who was paid initially in this sort of informal way. And he was not on the official payroll. That we do not dispute that. He went on to the official payroll in September of 2009, and those documents were submitted as exhibits. And at that point, the probation officer was satisfied that everything was on the up and up. And so I would suggest that these were... that Mr. Alvarez was the only person who was paid through this informal way. He was a new employee. Perhaps the fact that he was employed by his brother had something to do with that. And they had this book of checks, and since he was the only person paid through this this way, the checks were very close together in number. But that is just speculation, I have to admit. We have no direct evidence on that issue.
Thank you, Counsel.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. May it please the Court. Jonathan Koenig appears again on behalf of the United States. I'd like to begin with the practical and then move on to the purity of the law that Judge Bauer spoke about. And I'm saying this not to be sarcastic, but to make an irrelevant point. I think a bigger problem for Mr. Alvarez down the road than his grade B violation may be the underlying counterfeiting conviction. And I mention that because it factored into Judge Randa's assessment of his credibility. And what I think we have here is a textbook illustration of the preponderance standard in action. Do we have proof beyond a reasonable doubt? Absolutely not. But what we do have is two live witnesses, one of whom is well known to the court, the other of whom is the defendant with his history that I've just mentioned. And we have the pay stubs and the printout starting in September as well. And all of that suggested to Judge Randa the factual conclusion that these were false. And indeed, I would direct you to page 13 of the sentencing transcript under cross-examination, where the probation officer is being asked, "Now, you are alleging that this document is false." And the answer is, "Because Mr. Alvarez told me it was false." That's a factual determination, and here it rested on a credibility determination. So I would ask you to give deference to that finding and affirm.
The other violations were in the nature of failure to report. Is that right?
There were a couple of positive drug tests. There were failure to report for drug testing.
Okay.
There was the failure to report cooperation.
He was also cooperating with the police.
Yes, sir. He was an informant. And then there was I believe it was questioning by the Lannan Police Department that he failed to report it.
All those would require a higher sentence if he was found to have violated probation in those regards.
Well, those would all be grade C violations, so they would lead to a lower range.
A lower range.
But in fact, the sentence that was imposed would be at the bottom of that range.
Give me the rationalization behind the refusal of, or very specific admonition to the defendant, he's not to cooperate with the local police. Has anybody had any, do you know of any rationalization for that admonition?
For that requirement that he report
that? That's
part
of the probation. I don't think there's any question about it. The probation
and I forget whether it's
required that he not cooperate with any local police. But the local police,
I think it was without permission of the probation officer.
That's probably the case, and I'm sorry, I don't know off the top of my head if it was a standard.
It'd be interesting to figure out what the rationalization was, and can't trust those people.
Your Honor, are we talking about his work as an informant or his failure?
As I understand it, he was one of the things he was accused of doing was cooperating with the police without notifying or getting permission of the court.
Right.
And I want to know why he had to get permission of anybody to cooperate with the police. I mean, it makes no obvious sense to me that you're being penalized for cooperating with the police.
Well, not for cooperating, but failing to report that. I mean, that would be the kind of activity I would think a probation officer would want to know
crime,
about.
He had a rule saying that the FBI could not report to the local police, even if they found a violation.
But there might be all kinds
of... It wasn't in their jurisdiction. They couldn't... They were forbidden to do it. I always thought that was nuts, and I want to know what this one is.
Well, I'm speculating here, but I would imagine there would be all kinds of activities that go along with cooperation that a probation officer would want to know about. Are you going to be consorting with known felons, for example?
Does it say cooperating with the or notifying the probation officer or notifying the court? Do you know that?
I don't know the answer.
Maybe you know that. Brian, do you know that?
I don't know the rationale.
No, but do you know who he reports? He's going to cooperate with the police. Does he have to tell the court, or does he just tell the probation officer? That makes even less sense. I'm a law and order.
Well, I think it makes some sense, Your Honor. Doesn't the probation department need to know who you're going to be hanging out with and what you're going to be doing?
Hanging out with police is always a bad thing.
Well, but cooperation often entails hanging out with other bad guys. That's just my point.
Well, it might. But that could be more carefully spelled out. The simple admonition not to cooperate with the police strikes me as being the odd one.
Well, we would ask you to affirm if there's no further questions from the panel.
Thank you, Captain.
Thank you.
How much time does Mr. Mullins have?
I just wanted to point out that the typical standard condition of supervision with respect to working is that the defendant shall work regularly at a lawful occupation unless excused by the probation officer for schooling, training, or other acceptable reasons. There's no requirement in this typical standard condition of supervision that a person be paid by check. I believe that the probation officer in this case did tell Mr. Alvarez, you need to be paid by check. And but that was not one of the written conditions of his supervised release, and I think that might have been one of the reasons for some misunderstanding that
this
we
was after
believed.
She knew that he was going to be working for his brother?
I think it was, and the fact that his brother was a felon, and I believe some special considerations were made given
it's
that.
It's a genetic problem.
It seems to be.
And the offense was lying to the probation agent, right?
Well, the offense, the grade B violation, was submitting false pay stubs.
Same thing, lying to the probation agent, just the gravamen of the offense.
Through the pay stubs.
Not failing to take your pay by check. Or, in other words, getting paid in cash. That's not the violation.
No, but the only false statement in the pay stubs that was alleged, I believe, was that the pay stub suggested he was paid by check when he was paid by cash. That's what at least was suggested by the probation officer. I have nothing further unless the court...
Mr. Ballins, you took this case by appointment, did you?
I did, thank you.
Again, you have the thanks of the court for your representation of your client.